Okay. So I was saying, I was just thinking earlier about the start of Buddhism in, like, this particular Buddhism in Perth and how it all happened. So we still have one of the founders. I think the other ones have passed away. But one of the founders, she's still alive. Yeah, sometimes you see her walking around the place. And I think she does deserve a lot of gratitude and thanks for what happened from that little idea of deciding to start Buddhism in Perth. So basically, I think she just went around to different places. She ended up in Thailand with a group of other Buddhists to invite monks to come over to Perth to start up a place in Serpentine. So that was just an idea, and it happened, and now you can see what we have now. Like, we have this Buddhist society which is growing and growing, and then you have people from all over the world who are interested in this type of Dhamma. And I was traveling in a van today. The driver picked me up from Kusala Hermitage in Rolleystone. He's from Norway. and then the guy sitting in the back, he's from the US. And then the guy sitting in the back, he's Finnish. So you have, it's like from this little thing that happened many years ago, you've created something massive like this. I don't know if it's massive, but it's big and it's quite impressive in its own way. But that's like the idea of just like planting seeds. Like, this path is about planting seeds along the way to allow them to grow. And for beginners who come here, they may be searching for something. They are looking for like a particular type of seed to be planted in their minds that could help them better their lives. And I think, like, one of the seeds that we can learn to try to implement into our lives is this seed of contentment. This is ability to just... You don't have to be content all the time, because that's virtually impossible. but you can be content, and there are moments in your day where you can just be content with whatever you're doing. Take for example is, I think, like living in my situation, I live out in the bush, but it's not really, I don't really get to walk in the bush because I don't like bushwalking. But I do get to walk around the complex from time to time. And I find myself just being able to just having those, getting to have those moments of contentment. Like the moments of contentment where there's nothing much going on in your mind and you actually feel calm and at peace, just going for that little stroll. So in a sense, I think that's a good place for the mind to be able to be peaceful and content, where there's nothing much happening in it. And the reason why I say this is because being a monk, we watch our minds all the time. That's our job as meditators. I mean, you meditate to become peaceful. You meditate, you know, there's many reasons why you meditate. But the one thing that you learn about meditation is you learn the nature of the mind. And I think one of the reasons why I kind of like some of the teachings that came from this tradition as a younger monk, I was drawn to the teachings of Ajahn Chah. And I think one of the reasons why I was drawn to the teachings is because he spoke a lot about the nature of the mind. And that resonated with me because living life as a monk, that's a lot of the time that is spent, you're watching your mind and learning about it. So the reason why I say like peace and contentment is good for the mind is because I understand what turbulence, stress, and all those kinds of things that can do to the mind. And this is what you learn along the way. And you learn, I think I was saying this on the weekend retreat, you learn how to manage your mind. Yeah, like all these teachings that you come here, like you come here and Ajahn Brahm talks about the two bad bricks, or he has his stories about the chicken farmer, you know, the farmer that picks up the eggs and the other one that picks up the crap. And then like, all these other teachings like be content, make peace, be kind, being gentle. Like these kinds of things, I think, like they help manage the mind. Help manage the mind to calm it down. Yeah. So in your daily life, you can just see the nature of your mind and how it moves around. And I think if we can start to understand that the mind and the way it thinks causes a lot of stresses on it. And I think you all know that when you meditate. Take for example, I like to get involved with a lot of building work up in Kusala Hermitage, and today we had a supporter, and he's also like a little, he likes to work with his hands, and he was just asking me, you know, when you're doing something on the work site, do you think about it much? And I go, not really. I don't think about it that much because sometimes when you're trying to figure out a problem, you can try to work it out in your head, but when you actually go there to fix the problem, it's a completely different scenario. So you just ended up wasting time thinking about things. And then he told me he's like the complete opposite. He'll stay up all night thinking about this and thinking about that and trying to figure out a way how to do something. And I told him, I've done that before. And I found out that it was actually adding more restlessness, just like more thinking to the mind, which took away that calm. And that wasn't something that I wanted in my life. I didn't want to have that, you know, that restlessness, that overthinking, that stress in my life. Even though it's going to happen, and you learn how to deal with it, but if I had a choice, then I would do what I can to manage my mind to be able to keep it calm as much as possible. So I think a lot of these teachings, you know, a lot of these understandings are here to keep you calm, like keep you content, so you're able to walk through life without getting caught up in it too much. I think a lot of the problems is that people get caught up. They read the news and they get caught up in the news and they get flustered and they get angry. And that's like a type of thinking or like an attitude that you have towards these things around you. And the other attitude that you can have is this attitude of when you hear about, you know, like the Buddha just being able to just flow through life even with the chaos around it, can do it in a peaceful manner. And he can hear the news, he can hear the same news and have two different reactions. You can overreact, get angry about it, or you can just look at it with understanding and be calm with whatever's happening. And just like the understanding that the world is just going to be the way it's going to be. There's going to be wars, there's going to be sicknesses, there's going to be all these kinds of things. But, you know, we just don't need to get caught up in it. It's not really our business to get caught up in these things. But the point that I'm trying to make is that you know, you just try not to allow these things to just take away the peace and contentment that you may already have by reacting to the world in a certain way. And it's just like this interesting idea of how the mind and the amount of thinking causes us suffering. Like one of the stories that I like is from Ajahn Chah, and it's just a basic story about just overthinking and how it creates a bit of suffering in your life. And I know it's not like a big point, like it doesn't sound like too important. Like, you know, what's wrong with overthinking or, you know, peace, you know, calm and peace of mind, that's not a big deal. I mean, you know, we say it all the time. It may not mean much to you, but I think from the experience itself, like just being able to be calm is like, how calm are you really? And just to understand the value of being calm and having a quiet mind and how it contributes, like all these things that we teach here, they sort of like contribute to your well-being, not in the present moment, but also for years to come. And this is a simple story from Ajahn Chah that this just really makes sense to me over the years. Is like he talks about he's like teaching the idea of peace to people and what isn't peace. And he just gave a simple example, and it was about two guys just walking, just two guys. You can imagine in rural Thailand, they probably had no shoes on, shorts, a singlet. It's really hot. Maybe they're really tanned because they're farmers. skinny because all they can eat is sticky rice and whatever else. And but just, you know, mates just walking down the road, and then they see a duck. So they see a duck, and they walk past it. And two people seeing the one duck. The one person just thought, oh, you know, that's a duck. And he let it go. And that person was able to sleep well that night, Because he didn't fuss over it. He didn't make a big deal. And the second person walked past that duck. And then when he went home, he was thinking to himself, was that a duck? Or was it a chicken? What was it? Oh, maybe I should go on my cell phone and call my friend. Oh, but hang on, there weren't cell phones back in those days. It's like, what was it? I wish I could go back there to have a look, to see whether it was a duck, a frog, or a chicken. And then when I heard that, it's such a simple story, but it gives us like an understanding of how the mind kind of works. Yeah. And I always, you know, when I come here and I teach, I just like to talk about the practical side of things, because of that's just my character. I'm not the type to prepare too much for a talk and think about what I'm going to say. I'm just trying to draw from my own experience and just share it with you. And these are the things that I find work. And one of the things that is when you come to look at what monks are doing here, or what the nuns are doing here, or what Buddhists are doing, in a sense, is a journey that we're taking, and it starts from a beginning where we decide to just take on these teachings and just implement them into our lives, hoping for like a certain result towards the end. And like people who have been on this journey or on this path for a long, long time have an understanding of how it works. And the way it works is been spoken here many, many times, is through a gradual training or through a gradual practice. And it's a path where there is a searching for like peace and contentment. But it's kind of done through a holistic way of living. The way we interact with each other, or the way we use our minds. All of that adds up and it builds up over the years. So if you're practicing this path and say in 10 years' time, and if you reflect on how you were many years ago, you can see a difference. You can start to see how you have improved as a person, and you can see what has worked for you. And a few years ago when I was living in Sydney, there's this word that sort of came to mind when I was talking to the other monks is like, when we're doing this practice, implementing these teachings, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a healthier mind. This idea of a healthy mind. And this healthy mind is like, what is it? You know? Because sometimes when we meet these eager young practitioners, and they want to achieve like the lofty goals of the deep meditations and the deep insights. And yes, that's possible. But what we think is needed first is to be able to develop a healthy mind. And in order, so the So the gradual path, it starts from the beginning of what you do in your daily life. Yeah? How is your mentality? You know, the way you're using your mind. And just putting that effort into changing the way you look at things. And I think that's like the idea of like changing your mind to be able to look at things. This is the one thing that I think is possible to do. And I've heard comments that people think that it's very difficult to change their minds. I'm pretty sure you heard that from your friends or the people that you've been around with. They're like, oh, you know, I'm like this, yada, yada, yada. It's so difficult to change my mind. I can't do it. But then what I've learned living this life and just living with different types of people who have the same goals and the same ideas, what I've learned from them is that if you want to, you can change the way your mind thinks for the better. Yeah. And just put simply, you know, I know this person who didn't like working, and that was just causing him a lot of suffering because you're basically putting yourself in a place where you don't want to be. But then he changed his mind, you know. He like learned how to accept what he was doing, learned how to accept the work. And then from that acceptance, from that changing your perception, life became easier for him. It's sort of like the phrase, life becomes easier. It's a nice phrase. It's like, why do you come here? I come here to learn so that life can become easier. And I think in a sense that's true. Life has become easier for myself over the years because of the way I've learned how to manage my mind. And I'm in a position where, I think I'm in a position where it can be quite challenging because I'm sort of like leading a small place in Rolly Stone, and that's something new to me. I got to talk more to the lay people, got to teach more, I got to be more mature. And it could be on the surface, it could look a little bit challenging because you're in a position of, you know, leadership. But, you know, it's not too difficult. I don't find it too stressful. Yeah. But you just do the best that you can. You just do the best that you can. And you're giving it your best shot. And so there's no need for you to judge yourself over it. Knowing that you're giving it your best shot, even with your like meditation practice. I think with the meditation practice, sometimes we get a bit judgy on how our meditation's going. And, you know, instead of hitting ourselves over the head at the end of the meditation, just understand that we've given it our best shot. We've given it our best shot, and then we've done our best, so you can just let it go. There's no need to hold on to it. And yeah, so these are just little advices that I'm just trying to share with you. And just understand it's like just a gradual path, and having that intention from within yourself to try to make improvements all the time, putting in the causes. And you don't really know what the future may hold, but if you put in the causes, you put in the causes, then the results will come. And I think that's like one of the nice things that Ajahn Brahm has taught here over the years is sometimes when people come here, they're a little bit worried about their future. And he gave like this very simple piece of advice is, if you want to have a good future, if you want to have a good future, just look after the present. And the present moment will create your future. Yeah, it's like... And just being able to live mindfully is one of the things that we get taught in monastic life. And it has its benefits. There's like an old story, Ajahn Chah one. And he just gave this advice to a person that was visiting his monastery. And he basically said, whatever you do, give it 100%. Give it 100%. And he just took on that advice. And then I think after 20 years or so, he met up with Ajahn Brahm and he told Ajahn Brahm the story. And he said that was probably one of the best pieces of advice he's gotten, and it has helped him out so much. Yeah, and you know, I think being mindful is a great tool. It's a great tool to use to just overcome the mind, which is just thinking too much. Just being able to just ground yourself into the present moment, and it's just a simple practice. You know, when you're brushing your teeth, just make sure you're just brushing your teeth and just being mindful of that. And you know, when you're driving your car, just drive and don't think about too much else. And we're just doing this to be able to keep our mind in the moment, to be more present. It keeps us from thinking about things. And just hope you understand that a lot of our suffering comes from the thinking mind. If you reflect on the mind on a day-to-day basis and you ask yourself, where is this suffering coming from? It tends to come from a thinking mind. So this practice of being mindful helps ground yourself in this moment. So whatever you're seeing, you're just seeing it. Whatever you're eating, you're just eating it. And if you notice when you're doing these things, and you're fully present, you're not thinking about anything else. So if you find yourself, your mind is just racing away from you a little bit, and things are getting a little bit out of control, try to find something to be mindful of in this moment. Whether, you know, like if you're in the kitchen and you're chopping carrots and you're stressing over something, and if you want to try to take that stress away, just put the mindfulness into the chopping of the carrots. And then what happens over time is you start to see that you're building up these healthy habits, and these mechanisms that allow that helps you take a that helps you take away your mind from these unpleasant thoughts. It's like, how would you deal with your unpleasant thoughts in the past? Have you asked yourself that question? Do you just allow the mind to think about it more and more, or do you go and watch TV, or do you do other stuff? You found other ways to deal with it before, but this is a different way of doing it. And just being able to bring up that habit of just bringing your mind back into the moment, to the here and now, is beneficial for your mind. Just being able to just make it a habit, like say you maybe just, you know, you just getting caught up in something or some other thought, and you want to find a way to be able to manage it, and you're learning how to be mindful and just keeping your mind in the moment. After you build up that habit of being able to move your mind away from these things, in a sense, that's a way of letting go. There's a bug on the ground. In a sense, that's a way of letting go. The word letting go is used a lot on this seat. We talk about it all the time. And it's basically just being able to shift your mind from one thing to another. Being able to live in the present moment. Whatever's happened in the past has happened. You can let that go and live in the here and now. Living in the here and now, if you're able to do that consistently, you have learned how to let go to a certain degree. You just think about it. In order for you to be more mindful, you have to let go of quite a few things in the mind. So these two things, in a sense, work hand in hand. And we're just coming here, just trying to do our best as human beings, yeah. Is that a snake? No, I think it's a lizard or something like that, yeah. Yeah, and we just... And so so we just hear. So just being able to enjoy a sense of calm and peace from time to time. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And just putting the causes in and not knowing the results. Having a little bit of faith, or you can use your wisdom and just see the examples that you may see in life. And take for example the example of Ajahn Brahm. You know, he is where he is today. He's 71 years old. He's a kind man, full of wisdom, deep meditation. He wasn't like that 50 years ago. He was in England listening to rock and roll, and I don't know what else he would do. But he's like an example a living example for us that humans are capable of developing in this way. And when we see these examples, we may start to think that, hey, if it's possible for a human being to be like this, maybe I can be like this myself. So even though you don't really know how he got there, you can understand that he put in certain causes to be able to get to the place where he is today. And that's all it is. Ajahn Brahm's wisdom, happiness. I'm pretty sure he didn't know what type of wisdom he was going to get. I'm pretty sure he didn't know the extent of his happiness. But I'm pretty sure he put in the right causes for those things to happen. And maybe for yourself, you don't know what the future of doing these practices can have for you. It's sometimes really hard to understand. You may be able to read it in the book. You may have been practicing it, but nothing seems to happen. And probably the reason why nothing seems to happen is because you haven't been doing it for long enough. But if you do it long enough, these things will start to arise. I mean, you start to become a more happier person. Yeah? It's like, where did that all come from? You start to become a more peaceful person. It's like, who gave that to me? And these things just organically just like happen over time. And it's just all done by putting these causes in. Every day, just being mindful, live in the present moment. Live with harmlessness. You're not there to attack people. You're not there to hurt them. You know, these things are causes for something to happen in the future. And yeah. And these things just happen. Like, I was just thinking about it just then, if you know how to be mindful, like if you're here, if you're in this moment, there's nothing really happening in your brain. You're not thinking about the pasta you're going to eat after this talk. Or, you know, if you're mindful now, you're not really thinking about what happened 3 hours ago. You know, you're mindful, you're just here now. And if you look at it, I think if you're mindful, then a lot of letting go has already happened. Yeah. Just think about it. And yeah, sometimes it's nice to just not worry about things, like, yeah, who cares? But you're doing that for the sake of a healthy mind. So yeah, just like these causes that, like, just the idea of like putting the causes in, not knowing the results, but understanding the richness of life that it brings. You may not understand that now, but in a few years, you'll understand it. Like, you put in these causes in, and then you start to, like, it's like, oh, one day you're a little bit kinder. It was like, oh, well, where did that kindness come from? You know? Like, and then another day, you know, you're living life with more loving kindness. It was like, oh, where did that come from? This comes from putting in causes many, many years ago. And that's what I've been thinking about that. It's sort of like, that's what I've discovered about myself just over the years, is like, you don't need to force yourself to be happy. You don't need to force yourself to be kind. You don't need to force yourself to be like all these lovely qualities that we hear about. I think just through time, these things just come out naturally. The mind just develops its own wisdom, and knows how to deal with the situation at hand. Yeah. And you just do what feels right. You just do what feels right to you. This idea of like virtue and you know, loving kindness, or just caring for somebody. These things just come naturally when you start to become more like sensitive to the people around you. You become more in tune to the person in front of you, and these natural lovely qualities just come out. And I think like a lot of it has to do is just being able to be mindful, to have that clarity of mind, to respond accordingly to the situation. And in a sense, you're just like reacting with virtue or reacting with wisdom. Nothing is planned or premeditated. You're just doing things on the spot and, you know, just from your heart, because it feels right. It feels right, yeah. And, yeah. I think I'll stop there. Did that make sense? Okay. Okay. I was trying to make it make sense. So I'm glad it did. Not too many jokes tonight. Sorry about that. Any questions? Any questions? Any questions? I'm not scary, you know. I'm pretty sure you got questions on your mind. No, probably not. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just causes, like putting in causes, what you do throughout your whole day. Like meditation is a cause. Yeah? Like put time into the practice. That's putting a cause in. Like doing acts of charity, like going volunteering your time, that's putting in a cause. Or another thing is, like, we have this thing called the five precepts, like not drinking alcohol and just refraining yourself from lying and killing. So in a sense there, you're putting in causes there. Yeah. So the idea is to put in the causes expecting nothing in return. So that's what we say here all the time, because we want volunteers to do stuff without complaining. Just come in and volunteer and expect nothing in return. But you know what I mean. If you volunteer your time, if you help people out, and if you expect nothing in return, you're actually giving wholeheartedly. You're not giving with an agenda. Oh yeah, maybe I'll give to this person, and maybe I'll get something off him afterwards, or he owes me something, you know? You don't give like that. You just give freely. And that is a cause for happiness or a sense of well-being. Well, a sense of well-being sometimes, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, just to think about it, it's just a whole bunch of causes that we're putting in when we come across this path. It's like, in a sense, you're like making good karma, just putting in a whole bunch of good karma in this moment, and then just see what happens. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. Oh. How do you know if somebody has a healthy mind? Yeah. I think it's just, huh? Oh yeah, they're happy, they're content. They can see that, huh? Oh yeah, there's a different definition of happy mind. Healthy mind. Just a healthy mind, like a healthy mind which is, like, you know, not depressed. You know, depressed, if you're depressed, that's not a healthy mind. Yes, yeah, I understand that. That's it, yeah. Yeah, I understand that. That's like, they don't have insight into their own behavior. There's like a denial there, and they can't see it. They just can't see it. And some people are like that. And yeah. and sometimes it's difficult to work with people like that. But that's just the fact of this human mind of ours. Yeah. We can't all be the same. Not everybody can all have a healthy mind. And just to make it clear that the human mind is so complex. You know what I mean? Like, just the way that people, the ability that people can think and like wide ranges of mental illnesses kind of illustrate to us how complex this mind is. Yeah. And I think if we take that into consideration, that our minds are so complex and we can start to give understanding out to people. And yeah, you know, even though this person is blinded to his unhealthy mind and he thinks he's better, we understand that people are like this. So we learn how to accept them. Yeah. And when we can accept the wide ranges of human behavior and just the complexity of them, of their minds, that acceptance just leads us not getting too frustrated or angry at the person. Because that causes a lot of problems when you get angry and frustrated at people. So here we're trying to create more understanding. Yeah. Like, we talk about compassion here all the time. It's about being compassionate as well. Yes, yes, at the back.
You mentioned to give it 100%.
Yeah.
So how does one know when to stop and not get overworked?
I just think you understand, you understand the limitations of what your mind and body can handle. Is what you're trying to say is giving it 100% is like working all day? Is that what you mean? Or
yeah, I mean some work never ends, so it's never finished, like the work we do at work, for example.
Yeah.
So we 100% could mean, you know, do, as you said, do too much so that it gets unhealthy.
I think to find a balance in life is important. To be able to work, but also to be able to rest. Yeah, and like this idea of the middle way. The middle way is just trying to find a little bit of balance in life. And you understand that if you work too much, you'll just burn yourself out. And then if you work too little, or you don't do any work at all, you don't feel too good about yourself. You know, you start feeling lethargic and your mind gets a little bit cloudy. So just finding that bit of balance can just help with just keeping the mind, giving it a little bit of stability, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, when yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Give it 100%. And this is just like a beautiful attitude to have, I think, is just seeing other people when they work or just when they're doing something. It's like just being able to see people giving it 100%. There's like a sense of just like there's something nice about it. Yeah, just understanding that people are, by watching them, they're just giving it their full effort and they're not doing things half-heartedly. Sometimes when you see somebody doing something half-heartedly, you're like, go to a Friday night Dhamma talk and listen to some teachings on mindfulness and maybe you'll learn something. Any more questions?
Ajahn.
Yes.
Thanks for your talk.
Yes.
Made a lot of sense.
Oh.
And my question was,
yeah,
have you had a particularly difficult time as a monk? And how did you use the practice at that particular time?
Yeah, you had times where you didn't want to become a monk. You don't want to stay as a monk because of just attachments and just thought patterns, yeah. But you just stay as a monk. I think for me it's like having that understanding of how much progress I've made and knowing that if I stay on track, then the progress will continue, yeah. So yeah, I've had difficult times in my monastic life. And yeah, you just deal with it. You just deal with it. You just go back to your room, and some people deal with it in different ways, and sometimes you just allow it to just live in your mind for however long it wants to live in your mind. As monks, we have heaps of time to meditate. You know, we don't have to deal with the problems today so we can meditate tomorrow. We can meditate tomorrow and deal with the problems later on or something like that, you know? It's like we have a lot of time to deal with our problems. So whoever thinks about becoming a monk, and you know, you're going to have all these cravings or desires to be back out in the world or whatnot. And just trying to just understand that you don't need to fix them now. And you can just leave them alone. They may get stronger, and or they may disappear. And if they disappear, that's great. You got another day in monastic life. But if they take over, and that's happened with monks, you know, just the desires or the unhappiness in the robes, they just leave, and that's perfectly okay. Yeah. But yeah, don't really do much to deal with them, because you understand that if you just give it patience, then the thoughts will just dissipate itself. And I think the nice thing about being a monk is because you're living in a peaceful environment, and it's calm and there's not much going on. Once that difficulty disappears, you just go back to that peaceful, calm environment, and you know, you can settle that way. Whereas for you guys have a problem, and then it disappears, and then you're off to the nightclub. What's going on there? Well, you know what I mean, you know, the problem disappears, and then it's like, you've got to deal with something else. You don't really have that time to just be in a calm and stress-free environment. And I think that's like what we try to sort of encourage here for people like you, like to create that calm and stress-free environment is to meditate. Yeah. For us, we have, our rooms are so small, we've got four brick walls to look at. And we're like, But for you guys, you just like meditation, or like maybe try this, you know, you overcome a problem and just go for a walk at the beach afterwards. You're calm now and just go to the beach and just enjoy the calmness of nature. Something like that. Instead of just jumping into another, I don't know, you got to make some fried rice for your kids or something like that. Or, you know, some sort of busyness, yeah. Okay. That's it. I just got to answer these questions. So, how to deal with the feelings that I care about other people, but nobody cares about me in the same way? My parents did not know how to care, and now I sometimes feel painful when I care about people. Yeah. There's no need to feel down about yourself. I think that's what's happening here. You don't feel that you're getting the care from the people that you're giving care to. And it just goes back to the idea of letting go. You know, why think about things which is going to make you feel sad, and that it's not going to help. So just try to learn how to let it go, but don't let go of the care. Don't let go of the care and the love that you have for your parents or for the people around you. Because like I said, you're putting these causes in. You're putting these causes of care and love to these people, without expecting anything in return. So in a sense, probably one of the reasons why you're feeling sad is you because you're expecting something back. But like I said before, you just put these causes in, expecting nothing back. And then you just see what happens. And you just, like, putting the causes, you're actually doing this for yourself as well. Because if you can care and love unconditionally, then that in itself will give you a sense of well-being. So don't take away that sense of well-being that you're trying to create by feeling sad for yourself because people are not acting or responding the way you want them to. So just try to let that go and just, yeah, let it go. And then you have one less problem in your life. Okay? Okay. If there is no I what meditates, what gets reborn when you die? Oh, very deep question. How do I know if there is no no? Thank you. Oh, it's talking about non-self and dying. Oh, that's a really deep question, isn't it? Well, in Buddhism we believe in rebirth. So when you die, you get reborn again according to your karma. And this idea of like non-self that gets talked about in Buddhism. There's just so many ways to talk about it. And just what comes to mind is if you have a strong sense of self, you will suffer more. Because that sense of self, if you poke that strong sense of self, it sort of like reacts negatively. But if you have it's not like no self, it's like a lesser sense of self. It's like when people poke you or tease you, you know, you're cool with it, you know, you don't react too much. So I guess that's how you understand, that's another way of understanding what's a strong sense of self and what isn't. And like I said before, you know, like you just think about it logically, like the lesser sense of self you have, the lesser you get agitated and all that kind of stuff. And then I think when you meditate, if you think about it, the more quietness you have in your mind, the lesser of a self you have there. Because this self is, a lot of the times, it's just created with our thinking. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm going to go and have a sleep after this, or, you know, I'm going to start doing some building on Monday, or, you know, this person done this to me and, you know, I don't like them anymore. Like, you know, that's like self-building there. But if you sit down and you meditate and there's silence in the mind, it's like you can't really create a self out of silence. And when you talk about the deeper understandings of what non-self is, you need to go into those states of mind where there's like completely silence for a long, long time. And that's where you can understand it. But I think that's a nice way of understanding it, is like the stronger your sense of self, the more suffering you're going to have. Yeah. Okay. So like people with no self, if they claim that they don't have a self, you can go up and abuse them and they'll be cool as a cucumber. And I think that's what Ajahn Chah would do or monks would do. You know, people come and say, I'm enlightened. And then the abbot would just abuse them. And if they react negatively, you know, that person's not telling the truth. Yeah. So, yeah. So, who wants to say they have a low sense of self so I can work on my rage and anger? to see how enlightened you are. All right, let's finish. Okay, thanks for tuning in. And hope you got something from the talk. We just pay respects. And then if you want to come up and have a chat, then you're most welcome.